Warning, this episode contains content about infertility, miscarriages, and sex. Listener discretion is advised.
This is the You Define podcast with your host, Jackie Stoniak, where we navigate our way through your story from your perspective while honoring the people, places, and circumstances that have defined you.
Best thing to come from our infertility journey is when the people reach out and say, I've had two miscarriages and I've never told anybody, or I am going through a similar situation and didn't know anybody else that was going through it as well. So those messages mean more to me than people know when they just have that common ground with me, or they say that, you know, me sharing my story publicly on Facebook or on Instagram has helped them be able to be a little more open about it. And I mean, that's the most important thing, is that people feel like they can relate.
Journeying through something as hard as infertility can be isolating and lonely. I introduce to you Brianna, who you just heard, and her husband Jordan. They are stepping out in bravery and sharing their story so that you know you aren't alone. So let's start at the beginning of their story, their love story.
So Jordan and I met at UNK. We met at a college party our freshman year at the track house. From there, we dated briefly, kind of lost touch when he moved away, and then we reconnected several years later, and then we've been together ever since. So we got married in 2014 in February, and then really the summer after we got married, we decided we were going to go the route of not preventing pregnancy, but not trying. So it was just, if it happens, it happens. And that was what we were going to do. From the time I was little, I always wanted to be a mom. I mean, that was always something that I knew I wanted to do. Even, I think, in college, when I went from major to major to major, it was always in the back of my head that I was going to be a mom anyway. So I never really had to solidify what I wanted to do when I grew up. But even as a kid, I was always all about the dolls. I would beg for like one of the life-size or the realistic dolls. And it was just always part of my plan was to be a mom. So I think when things didn't always go as I planned through our journey, that's when I had to kind of rethink, what do I want to do when I grow up? Because I never had the chance to really think about it, because that was something I didn't think I needed to.
They are a married couple, enjoying being newlyweds, finding their groove as a married couple, and enjoying intimacy together. Remember, they aren't preventing pregnancy at this point, but they really aren't tracking anything either. Just rolling the dice.
After about a year and a half of that trying, not preventing, we then decided it was time to actively try. After a year of that, then we still hadn't had any success, so that's when we went to the doctor. We started having conversations about what we needed to do. All the initial testing was saying, oh no, you're fine. It's, you know, everything looked good on paper. There was no reason why it shouldn't be working. So we started doing rounds of Clomid and Femara just as, you know, an initial step to try and achieve pregnancy. And actually not long after that, I became pregnant for the first time. So I think it was about 2 years after we had started trying that I had finally gotten pregnant. After we were pregnant that very first time, I was super excited, obviously. My husband was out of town when that happened. And so I called him, I FaceTimed him, and I told him, showed him the test, and we both were super excited. And of course, after trying for 2 years, I was ready to tell anybody. So I called a friend over, and for some reason, she just knew that that's why I wanted her to come over. And so she came in, I told her the news, and she's like, hold on, I have to run to my car. And so she ran out and she brought in a onesie that said worth the wait. And she's like, I've been having this in my car this whole time, just waiting for the day. So that was a super awesome moment for somebody to know, somebody was rooting for us that whole time and just waiting for that news. it was probably 2 days after that positive pregnancy test, I started to have some bleeding and had my beta drawn.
Just a second, before we move on. Beta numbers measure the amount of HCG hormone in the body. HCG is a hormone produced by the placenta and is evident after conception. These numbers can indicate whether a pregnancy is progressing as it should.
And it was super low. They weren't really optimistic about it being a viable pregnancy. 2 days later, went to repeat it, and it had declined. So we knew that we were having our first miscarriage. The excitement was very short-lived. It was such an exciting time for those couple days, but it quickly turned the other direction. We decided to keep trying, and actually without any medical assistance, we got pregnant shortly after that, only a couple months later, and it was crazy because it was natural, even though we had tried naturally before. You know, this one seemed a little bit more optimistic, and it definitely lasted a lot longer. I think, at that point, we had told some of our family members. It was around the 6 to 8 week mark, and then I started, my beta numbers rose accordingly. We were on the right track of what we felt was the right track, and then I started to have a little bit of bleeding again. So, our fears were kind of coming into play there again, and we went to the doctor, and it was found to be my first ectopic pregnancy.
Ectopic pregnancy is where the fetus develops outside the uterus, typically, in Brianna's case, in a fallopian tube. A fertilized egg can't survive outside the uterus. In fact, if left to grow, it can damage organs and cause life-threatening blood loss.
Before we hadn't really experienced this situation, we hadn't had the ectopic before. And it was, what do we do from here? And they decided to treat it with methotrexate to terminate the pregnancy to try and save both of my fallopian tubes for that reason. I had had the test done before that. I had no blockage in my tubes. There was no reason why it should have, been stuck in the tube. But they, again, assured me it was a fluke thing and that it would probably be okay the next time.
This is Brianna and Jordan's second miscarriage. And while there is deep grieving, doctors and tests continue to assure them that there isn't anything hindering them from becoming parents.
Quickly after, in April, it was my first cycle back after experiencing that ectopic pregnancy. I was pregnant again, naturally. It was kind of a surprise because we hadn't been trying because we had just gone through something kind of traumatic and, we weren't trying at all. And I had some symptoms. I took a test and I was pregnant again. And that was a whirlwind, that one, because when you're actively trying, you're always, waiting those 2 weeks to take a test, or you're overanalyzing every symptom, like, oh, I have a cramp, or oh, I have a headache, or I'm tired, or something sounds super yummy to eat, but I don't normally like that. You're overanalyzing every single symptom. So for that one, it was just kind of a surprise. I took a test, and that was the first time that I realized that my husband had been tainted by this whole experience, because there was not 1 ounce of excitement. There was not 1 ounce of positivity when I told him that. It was kind of like, well, we'll see where it goes. Knowing that, the past 2 times it hadn't worked out, so why would this work out? And it didn't. So, that's kind of where I feel like our positivity and our encouragement for the whole process started to dwindle, was just knowing that, another one bites the dust. The third one wasn't working either. And that's when I started to know that something else was probably happening. They had previously diagnosed me with unexplained infertility because everything looked good on paper. Nothing looked out of place. And that's when I kind of started to advocate more for, you know, what's going on with me? What's going on with him? Is there something that's not happening or something that's not adding up? So at this point, we are still seeing my OB, you know, putting the faith and trust in her, mostly because of the financial burden going to an RE or going to a specialist. It's so expensive. It's so, you know, discouraging when you see the price tag on things like that and see the price of fertility treatment. You tend to do any avenue or go down any path that you possibly can while still trying to push forward medically, but then also saving yourself financially. From there, we began Clomid again, trying to, you know, see, you know, it worked before. Why wouldn't it work again? So we, you know, a few months later, we were pregnant again. And that's when I found out I was having another ectopic. So at that point, they decided that the medication that I used, my previous ectopic, wasn't going to work again. So that's when I had surgery to remove my fallopian tube.
4 babies lost, and now Brianna is recovering from a surgery to remove her right fallopian tube. Luckily, women have 2 fallopian tubes, so it is still possible for Brianna to get pregnant naturally. Trying for baby number 5 is on their radar.
And then in February of 2018, we decided to do a monitored cycle. So we did Clomid and monitored. So we went to the doctor's office and they would tell me, you know, what side the lead follicle was on, and when the best time was to try and get pregnant. So at that point, I had went in the doctor and I had just had my right tube removed and my leading follicle was on the right side. So they said, you know, most likely it's not going to happen because it's very uncommon that, you know, your other tube would pick up the egg from the opposite side. So they said, you know, go ahead and have sex, see if it works, but just don't get your hopes up because it's on the same side where you don't currently have a tube. So, you know, we tried it. We figured, you know, what do we have to lose? We had already put money into the medication and into the doctor's appointments. So we did it again, or we went through it, and I got pregnant. So the opposite tube had picked up the follicle. So this was my 5th pregnancy. I really thought that one was the one, to be honest. I had went to the doctor, I had had my beta numbers, and they were the highest they had ever been. So for those beta numbers, you know, they're looking for a certain starting point depending on, you know, how many days past fertilization you are. And then from there, they look for, you know, it to double every 48 hours, essentially. So, you know, I kept going back every 2 days, and they doubled every single time. They were, you know, in the thousands. I felt like that was a good starting point. My numbers had always been super low prior to that. So I thought that that was definitely the one. I had actually already had an appointment with a fertility doctor prior to getting pregnant that 5th time. And I called, you know, excited to say, hey, I have to cancel my appointment because I'm pregnant. And she said, you know what, hold on 1 second. Let me just double check with the doctor. So she had talked to the fertility doctor and she said, so, you know, this is your 5th pregnancy. This is your history. I would like to take a look at your labs and I would like for you to still come in and see me. And I was like, okay, you know what, whatever, we'll go in, we'll see the doctor. And I thought nothing of it, but when we got there, the doctor said she did not like the looks of my lab work. And to my understanding, the whole time I thought, you know, we were smooth sailing, everything was good. And she said, I really want to do an ultrasound on you. So we did an ultrasound in the fertility clinic. And that's when I found out I was having my 3rd ectopic pregnancy. So that one was in my remaining tube. And that was a huge turning point for me because not only was that the day that I found out that I would have to do IVF for any future pregnancies and I'd no longer have a natural pregnancy, that was the first time I had heard my baby's heartbeat. I just heard the doctor say, oh, this little guy has a heartbeat. We need to get her to surgery immediately. Because if the heart, the vibrations of the heartbeat can rupture the fallopian tube and cause you to bleed out internally. So I was rushed to the hospital to have my tube removed. But hearing that it had a heartbeat and that I had to take that away was devastating. The only way to be pregnant after having both of your fallopian tubes is to do IVF, because that way they are taking the sperm and the egg, creating an embryo outside, and then planting it directly into your uterus. A couple months later, we decided to sell our house to pay for IVF. IVF comes with a hefty price tag of, on average, about $20,000 out of pocket. So for us, there was no way to do it without coming into some hefty finances. We had already put quite a bit into it. We decided to go forward with IVF after selling our house. At that point, we went through, you know, the shots, the stimming, the everything, the testing. I still was diagnosed with unexplained infertility at this point, and I was told that it must be a transportation issue because of my history of ectopics, and that IVF was probably going to work for me based on, you know, my test results and my age. We, at that point, we did our retrieval, and we only retrieved 3 eggs from that first retrieval, 3 fertilized, and then we were able to get 2 embryos out of that, and we ended up transferring both embryos at the same time, and neither one stuck.
What this means for them is that round of IVF didn't work. They sold their house, used every cent to their name, and still no baby. A couple years later, they pinched pennies and saved up to try IVF again. And during one of her monitoring appointments, she had less than 2 eggs, so they canceled the cycle altogether. While this alleviated some of the financial burden, hope was near gone.
We kind of came to the conclusion that something, again, was not right. Something with me was just not happening the correct way because I'm not able to produce or not being able to have that many eggs at retrieval, we decided to look into embryo adoption. So from there, I saw a post on Facebook in one of my IVF groups of somebody wanting to donate 2 of her embryos. And I don't know what, you know, made me contact her. I don't know what, you know, prompted me. We hadn't even really talked about it at home. But I sent her a message and told her my story, and she reached back. You know, she reached out to me and said, I'd love to get to know you more. I talked to her for a couple days and they picked us to donate their embryos too. So from there, you know, we went through the legal process of drafting a contract and, you know, getting the embryos in our name, transferring over those rights to them. And they were in Virginia Beach. So we decided to keep the embryos in Virginia Beach instead of risking any type of, you know, travel arrangements for them. And in the summer of 2021, we went to Virginia Beach to transfer the tested embryo, which was a boy, and unfortunately, it was unsuccessful as well. We finally felt like that was it. That was the one. This was the path we were meant to be on. None of the other things had worked because this transfer was our ticket out of this, you know, infertility hell. This embryo was going to be the lifesaver. And even though it wasn't biologically related to me, I think that loss and that, you know, that realization that that transfer didn't work was the hardest of them all. I think knowing the gender you know, didn't help that situation. But I think I was most attached to that embryo. So having that one fail was definitely a punch in the gut, for sure.
Brianna would find out that she has an AMH number of 0.3, which is a menopausal number. AMH corresponds to your egg count. And while you only need one good egg to get pregnant, in the IVF process, you spend a lot of time and money amping up your supply for a retrieval of several eggs to increase your chance of pregnancy. And for Brianna, it wasn't possible.
I struggle a lot with that feeling of letting other people down. You know, we did the It Takes a Village fundraiser. Everyone bought the t-shirt. People Venmo'd me. People sent me money. I would receive checks in the mail. So everyone was in our corner, and I felt like we had a lot riding on it. I felt like everyone was expecting me to succeed, and there was a lot of pressure that I felt that I needed to succeed, even though it was something that wasn't in my control. I wasn't able to, you know, make it viable regardless of anything that I did, but I felt a lot of just the feeling of letting people down. I let those supporters down because they were rooting for me. They had invested in our journey. I felt a lot of letting our family down. That feeling to my parents, they want to be grandparents just as much as I want to be a parent, or that we want to be parents, that I'm letting them down because I'm not able to give that to them because I'm the only child, I'm their only shot. So I feel a lot of pressure that no one's putting on me but myself, but I feel a lot of pressure and a lot of just anger, for sure. And I camouflage it with a lot of just feeling like I let people down. You know what? I think I did have a little shame in the fact that my body couldn't do what it was made to do as well. I think I wanted to be a mom so bad, and why was I the one that couldn't make it happen? So, or why does, you know, so-and-so down the street get to have it and I don't? So I think, you know, jealousy creeps in too, but guilt for sure. You know, today it's something that, not that we don't talk about it, but I feel because of our past, sometimes we don't necessarily keep it on the front burner to talk about because there's a lot of fear there. There's a lot of, you know, what's next? What's going to happen? Is it going to happen? So for me right now, I recently got a new job that has fertility benefits and has that coverage. So it was something I've looked at for years and years and years, and finally got the opportunity to get in with that company where I have those benefits and I have the option to try it again. And for us, it's just a conversation of what makes sense for us. We don't want to be just on another plan or another path that, you know, patient X and patient Y and patient Z are on. We want to do a plan that makes sense for my testing and my background and for me. Because whether or not we're paying out of pocket for it, we still want it to have the best chance possible. So right now we're still having conversations about what's next. We've talked about every avenue possible. We still have one adopted embryo left. We've talked about doing IVF again to see if I can do anything to be able to retrieve more eggs. And we also, you know, we talk about adoption regularly. Unfortunately, adoption is crazy expensive as well. So unfortunately, everything in this journey has a price tag. So a high school friend and I kind of worked together. She brought this idea to me about starting a foundation to help families in Nebraska with infertility financially because of the big burden that it, you know, causes so many families. So she brought the idea to me and I said I would help in any way that I, you know, any way I could. So we started the Nebraska Infertility Foundation here in Nebraska to provide that financial assistance. So currently right now we are working on raising funds to begin that grant and scholarship process to those families to help with that for their medical assistance. For me, getting into the foundation and helping with it, it's been difficult in the fact that we're still going through it. So, you know, I'm helping others gather funds and try and get them to be able to start their family, but it also has been difficult for me as well, still going through it. So I think that's helped with my drive with helping with the foundation is letting them know that I'm right alongside with you. It's I don't have something that you don't have. I'm right by your side fighting for that same thing as well. But let's talk in a way that can give us some faith to go around. We'll hold tight as we can when it's better again. And that'll sustain me for now.
There will be information in the show notes about the Nebraska Infertility Foundation. If you are interested in supporting the foundation financially, you can find the different avenues to donate in the show notes as well. If you want to interact with this story more, you can find us on Facebook and Instagram at You Define Podcast. Thank you for finding yourself here, for staying a while. But I have to ask, what defines you?